Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Gans, and today we will be studying Sefer Ezra, Perek Gimel, Chapter 3. At the end of our last Perek, Chapter 2, Perek Bet, the wave of Jews making Aliyah from Bavel, led by Zerubbabel and Yehoshua, arrived in Yehuda and settled in their cities. Perek Gimel, Chapter 3, now tells the story of this community's first steps towards rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash, the holy temple that had been destroyed by the Babylonians in 586 BCE, nearly 50 years before. In Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, we read, Vayiga hachodesh hashevi'i, when the seventh month came, ubnei Yisrael ba'arim, and the children of Israel were in their cities. Vayayasfu ha'am ke'ish echad el Yerushalayim. The people gathered themselves together, as one man, to Yerushalayim. When the seventh month, Tishrei, rolled around, it seems that Vayayasfu ha'am ke'ish echad, the people felt pulled on their own to gather in Yerushalayim. There was this organic sort of grassroots movement to celebrate the holidays of the month of Tishrei all together in Yerushalayim. Now, holidays necessitate sacrifices, according to the laws of the Torah, and so Yehoshua, the Kohen Gadol, along with Zerubbabel, construct a mizbeach, an altar. Ve'achinu ha-mizbeach al-mechonotav, I'm reading in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. They set up the altar on its base. Ki ba'ema aleihem me'amei ha'aratzot, because they were in fear of the peoples of the land. Ve'ya'alu alav olot la-Hashem, and they offered burnt offerings on it to Hashem, olot la-boker ve'la'erev, burnt offerings each morning and evening. Building this mizbeach ensures the continuity of the avoda, the sacrificial service of Hashem. It represents a kind of physical continuity as well. We learn that they built this mizbeach al mechonotav, on its base, presumably upon the original foundation of the mizbeach from the first Beit HaMikdash. Yet our Sefer tells us that aside from being able to offer the holiday sacrifices, there was another reason why they built this mizbeach. The returnees to Yerushalayim were met with hostility by the local population, peoples that had settled in their land in their absence. We will hear more about these enemies in Perek Dalet, Chapter 4, but we're learning here already that the Jews of Shivat Zion are afraid of them. And so they build this Mizbeach, Ibn Ezra suggests, to offer sacrifices in prayer to Hashem for protection from their enemies. The phrase, ki be'ema aleihem, for fear was upon them, may also explain why they choose to construct only an altar, a tentative step, rather than immediately breaking ground to rebuild the temple in its entirety. The Perek goes on to describe the holiday celebrations that first year back in Yerushalayim. Rosh Hashanah, the first of the holidays in the month of Tishrei, is mentioned obliquely by date, if not by name, in Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Miyom echad lachodesh hashevi'i, from the first day of the seventh month, hechelu ha'alot olot la'Hashem, they began to make burnt offerings to Hashem, v'heichal Hashem lo yusad, though the foundation of the temple of Hashem had not been laid. The first day of Tishrei is, of course, Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur is not mentioned in our chapter, nor anywhere else in Nach, for that matter. Perhaps here, the reason it's left out is because Yom Kippur is such a temple-centered day, anchored by the service of the Kohen Gadol in the Beit HaMikdash. Since at this point in our story, the people have not yet rebuilt the Beit HaMikdash, they're therefore unable to perform that avoda, and so Yom Kippur is maybe glossed over. Sukkot, the final and the longest of the three major holidays in Tishrei, is mentioned explicitly in Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Sefer Ezra tells us, with a touch of pride, that the prescribed sacrifices for Sukkot were offered every day of the holiday, in accordance with Torah law. This is no small feat, as Sukkot demands a different number of sacrifices for each day of the holiday, for a total of 70 bulls. Despite all the festivities, the end of Pasuk Vav, verse 6, reminds us, Heichal Hashem lo yusad, the foundation of the temple of Hashem, was not yet laid. And so, the second half of our perek, beginning with Pasuk Zion, verse 7, describes the initial efforts to do just that. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Vayitnu kesef lachotzvim v'lacharashim. They paid hewers and craftsmen with money. Uma'achal u'mishte v'shemen latzidonim v'latzorim. And the tzidonim and sorim, they paid with food, drink, and oil. Lahavi atzei arazim min halevanon. To bring cedar wood from Lebanon, el yam Yafo, by sea to Yafo. Kirishyon korish melech pras aleihem. In accordance with the authorization granted them by King Cyrus of Persia. The Jews hire stonemasons and carpenters, specifically from the countries of Sidon and Sor, experts in these crafts. They order cedar wood from Lebanon, and the pasuk tells us that Koresh himself granted them this expensive, luxurious wood. This buzz of activity, hiring foreign craftsmen, placing international lumber orders, suggests that the Jews had grand plans for Bayit Sheni, the Second Temple. They hoped to restore the Beit HaMikdash back to its former glory. After months of gathering supplies and making preparations, the people are finally able to break ground and lay the foundation of the building. This takes place as we read in Pasuk Chet, verse 8, Ubashana Hasheni, Livoam el Beit HaElokim, Yerushalayim, Bachodesh Hasheni. In the second year of their coming to the house of God at Yerushalayim, in the second month, Zerubbabel and Yehoshua and the rest of the priests and Levites are there to oversee the work. The Levium stand with their musical instruments, their cymbals at the ready, to accompany the groundbreaking with songs of praise to Hashem and celebratory music. The crowd rejoices. Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11 reads, Vaya'anu behalel uvehodot laHashem. They sang to one another in praising and giving thanks to Hashem. Ki tov ki li'olam chasto al Yisrael. For he is good, for his loving kindness endures forever toward Israel. V'chol ha'am heiriu tru'a gedola behalel laHashem. All the people shouted with a great shout when they praised Hashem. Al husad beit Hashem, because the foundation of the house of Hashem was laid. Sefer Ezra describes the foundation laying of the Second Temple in a way that is strikingly reminiscent of the construction of the first Beit HaMikdash, as described in Sefer Melachim and Sefer Divrei Hayamim. For both temples, construction began in the second month, the month of Iyar. Both relied on the workers from Sidon and Tsur, and coordinated shipment of supplies by sea to Yafo. Both mention payment of food, drink, and oil to the workers, and both request cedar wood in particular. These parallels in language and in substance tell us that those who built Bayit Sheni hoped to recreate as much as possible Bayit Rishon, the first Beit HaMikdash. They hoped to restore the Beit HaMikdash to its grandeur and its glory, as it was in the Halcyon era of Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. Yearning to turn back the clock to better times, to paradise before the fall, is a deeply human impulse. And although it's understandable that the Jews of Shivat Zion model the Second Temple after the first, I think we have to ask whether that impulse is wise. The Jews of Shivat Zion find themselves in dramatically different political and economic circumstances than did Shlomo HaMelech. Solomon reigned at the height of the United Monarchy, enjoying unprecedented peace and prosperity and regional power. By contrast, the people building Bayit Sheni in the 6th century are few in number, dependent on Persian funding, subject to the vicissitudes of Persian authority, and threatened by local enemies. Eventually, as we will learn, these limitations will force the Jews of Shivat Zion to scale back their grand designs for Bayit Sheni and rely on more humble materials and means for its construction. How to rebuild in a way that honors continuity with the past while also meeting the current moment emerges as a theme in Shivat Zion, one that feels relevant until today. This brings us to the final scene in Perek Gimel, which ends our chapter on a poignant note. Pasuk Yud Bet, verse 12, reads, V'rabim mehakohanim v'halevim v'rashei ha'avot hazakenim. But many of the priests and Levites and heads of fathers' houses, the old men, Asher ra'u et habayit harishon, who had seen the first house, biyasdo ze habayit be'enehem, when the foundation of this house was laid before their eyes, bochim bekol gadol, they wept with a loud voice, v'rabim b'trua b'simcha l'harim kol, and many shouted aloud for joy. There is a very mixed reaction in the crowd as the foundation of Bayit Sheni is laid. Many are shouting with joy, celebrating this momentous occasion. But others, specifically the older generation, those who had visited and witnessed the first temple in their younger years, are crying. They watch the foundation stones being laid for a temple that they can already tell will be a mere shadow of the first, and they weep in grief for what was lost and in dismay at what they are left with now. The prophet Haggai gives voice to the devastation of these elders in Haggai Perek Bet Pasuk Gimel, chapter 2, verse 3. Mi bachem hanishar asher ra'a et habayit hazeh bechvodo harishon? Who is left among you who saw this house in its former glory? Uma atem ro'im oto ata? How do you see it now? Halo kamohu ke'ayin be'enechem? Isn't it in your eyes as nothing? The final verse of our chapter makes a curious observation. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. Ve'ein ha'am makirim kol truat hasimcha lekol bechi ha'am. The people could not discern the noise of the shout of joy from the noise of the weeping of the people. Ki ha'am meriim trua gedola, for the people shouted with a great shout. V'hakol nishma ad lemirachok, and the noise was heard from far off. Sefer Ezra tells us that the sound of the elders weeping co-mingled with the shouts of joy from the rest of the crowd. This curious observation on the part of the narrator, in fact, perfectly encapsulates this moment in Jewish history. Shivat Zion is a mixed bag. Some Jews have returned to Yerushalayim, but the majority remain in exile. They've been granted permission to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, but restoring Jewish monarchy or any kind of national independence is out of the question. They are supported, for now, by the Persian king, but local enemies threaten their efforts to rebuild. At this foundation laying of Bayit Sheni, the sounds of joy and sorrow become one. This reminds us that life rarely deals in absolutes. Most often, things in life are messy and imperfect. Sefer Ezra teaches us that those moments, too, can be cause for appreciation and celebration. This shir is dedicated Lezecher Nishmas Marcy Stern, Mincha Yehudis Bas Gedalyahu. She was a dedicated teacher whose deep love of the Sifrei Nevi'im and Shivat Zion left an indelible mark on her many students.